Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's Anyone, Anytime, Anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years, and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Tree Life Hour on the Pagans Tonight Radio Network. And the Tree Life Hour is brought to you by the Tree Life Community Center, a nonprofit group of people in the Louisville, Kentucky area trying to create space for people of our faith, religions, and philosophies. And this is Samara Luna.
And this is Raven Fire Doll.
And our show is all about community, things we think the pagan community should be discussing, talking about, whether it be issues, paths, or the current events. So, and tonight is our heathen perspective. So I am going to let Raven Fire take over.
Alrighty. We are waiting for Ulf to call in real quick, but tonight we're going to be talking a lot about the Norse concepts of afterlife and kind of what happens after death, and a little bit, we're going to talk a little bit about death, and I believe there's Ulf right there. Ulf.
Oh. Good evening.
So, you ready to talk about this?
As ready as I'm going to be, I guess. I do find it funny that you let me into the show right after mentioning talking about death. No, that's not creepy at all.
Hey, you're the one married to her.
Good point.
Okay, so I guess we're going to kind of talk about, I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about burial practices and that type of thing first before we kind of go into the afterlife stuff, because there are some misconceptions, and some of them are based on Hollywood, about different things that have actually happened in heathen times after someone died. And some of these are regional. Some of these are depending on where in Europe you died. Sometimes people were buried and put into a mound. Sometimes people's bodies were burned. And then sometimes you had a ship burial, which is a little bit like what you see in 13th Warrior and on the TV show Vikings, but not exactly like it, because a lot of the ship burials that they have found are actually done on land.
How is it called a ship burial if it's on land?
Because they bury you in a ship, they burn it, and they set it on fire.
Okay, that makes more sense.
And they've actually found mounds with the ship buried in them, so they know it's legit, because I've seen pictures of one. It was usually, those were usually, the inland ship ones like that were usually reserved for, they believe, for nobility, for the jarls and such. But, I mean, it's legitimate. It's pretty awesome, actually, to look at. Some of the practices are a little, but.
Well, and the practices are kind of different from, like, our modern version of burial.
Oh,
because our concepts, the concepts of society are a little different. But, like, we have the Oseberg grave is evidence of a ship burial. And the only known male Viking grave in France, it's a double cremation grave, show that the bodies had been burnt in the ship. And both the boat and the grave goods were badly charred.
Okay, I'm going to step in just for a second because there seems to be we're getting feedback either from Oaf or from you, Ravenfire. I'm not sure.
Okay, I think I'm in a different room.
Yeah, I'm not sure where I'm at could be given feedback if it's me.
Okay, or maybe I'm just hearing things. I don't know. If you all can't hear it, it may just be me. Sorry, I just wanted to throw that out there.
No worries. No worries. If there is feedback we're not hearing, we don't want our listeners being bombarded by feedback.
I'm sorry, go on.
I know you were saying a minute ago, Raven, about there being societal differences in comparison to now, and of course there are. I mean, times have changed greatly, you know, and we're in a completely different country. There's that, too. A very young country, some people forget that, and, you know, most of our burial practices are borrowed from the different cultures that made us up here.
Yeah, and yeah, especially like if you listen to some like modern fiction works and stuff, they'll talk about, you know, that America is a young country. But a lot of times, you know, there's open cremation because they did that a lot in Iceland. And we've got some pretty strong evidence of the open cremation and stuff from Ibn Baldwin, who was actually in the Viking world at the time. And he actually talks in his journals about a ship burial.
And for those who don't know, that is the guy that the book that 13th Warrior is based on is loosely based on. The book's a little closer to his life, but still a loose basis, and the movie gets even further from it than that. But
yeah,
that's the guy she's talking about, the actual guy. A lot of people have seen that movie or read that book and don't realize he was an actual guy, actual Arab who lived among the Vikings. Pretty cool. I'm sorry, Raven, I just wanted to throw that in there for folks. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. And then the other thing I guess I want to talk to is like people dying into the mound, or people or mound burials, and we do have evidence for that. And as far as a modern way or kind of a modern way of looking at this for someone who's not super familiar with this is if you think of Lord of the Rings. With Rohan, the burial mounds in Rohan. That's kind of one way of looking at that idea. And then it talks about, you know, there's a lot of talk about a belief that the bodies still dwell in the mound after they die. And then there's something really interesting that H.R. Ellis Davidson wrote in one of her writings, and I believe it's Road to Hell. She cites several certain families who believe that all their kin would die into certain holy mountains, such as the clan of Thulthur Munster Kegi, Sovnar the Wizard and the Matriarch author, the life in the Ho or Hill does not seem to be too bad. Ejibril Saga describes how, after the drowning of Thorolfr's son, Thorstein, a serving man of the farm who had second sight saw the mountain opened and a great feast with all of Thorstein's, or which Thorstein was welcomed among his kinsmen. After Grunnar of Hildebrand's death, he was seen lying in the mound with light shining from within and seemed cheerful and in the best of spirits as he chanted verses. And then, of course, the giving of grave goods, food, drink to the dead was done continuously from the earliest times through the end of the Viking Age. And it also strengthens the idea that that the people who were buried in the Hau or the mounds actually lived there. And then often the Aethling dead, which is the nobility, were given company, such as the man's thrall or a woman's maidservant, like you'd see in the Osenberg burial, but they did not always appreciate it because, like, in one of the sagas, Landmannbrook tells of a man named Aspundr is laid in his Hau, and a thrall slain to go with him, but he is later heard or appears to his wife in a dream complaining loudly of the lack of room. So the mound had to be opened and remove the thrall. And in some ways that people, you know, thought that when you died, you went into to these mounds. It's also known as kind of dying into the land. Which, you know, is something that I find extremely interesting. Of course, in Iceland, they basically burned the dead so that they could swiftly go into the afterlife. But there was kind of a fear of walking dead.
Yep. Believe it or not, believed in zombies, sort of.
Yeah, according to the Ejibril Saga, when Thorfinn Twistfoot was burned, a cow licked the ashes up and got from that its half, which grew into a man-killing bull. Other sources mentioned show that burning could also be a rite of great respect. Snorri tells us in the Yingling Saga that the practice of cremation was introduced by Odin and thus particularly thought to be associated with that god's cult.
It's interesting. I hadn't heard about that one before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of the information, like, I've gotten from, like, various things, but a lot of it is, I'm looking at stuff from Our Troth Volume 1, because that's actually a really good jumping off point when you're studying and researching stuff. So, if you are curious, you want to learn more, that's where I would kind of suggest anyone to kind of have a starting off point, because there's a lot of really good text citations in the chapter that can kind of give you places to further study and kind of determine for yourself what kind of where you stand and where you believe. Because a lot of what is written as far as like burial practices and those stuff vary from region to region. Because, you know, in Iceland, they're burning bodies, whereas in certain parts of Scandinavia, they're doing ship burials, where in other parts, they're doing mound burials. I think we found an Anglo-Saxon mound burial in England. And you know, that's the Sutton Hoo. And the person was buried with his armor, his weapons, all sorts of grave goods. I mean, it's amazing the amount of grave goods they pulled out of the Sutton Hoo. I mean, they have an entire room at the British Museum just dedicated to the Sutton Hoo hoard.
Yeah, it's the most famous Viking burial slash hoard ever found, as far as I know.
Yeah, it or the Oseberg, because the Oseberg is pretty famous too. But the Oseberg burial was in Norway, which, especially for people who are English speaking, would be harder to kind of get more information about than Sutton Hoo, which was in England. And like, you know, the one of the few remaining sources of Anglo-Saxon armor were found in the Sutton Hoo. Like, they had pretty much a whole helm. And that they've actually been able to recreate helms based off this original helm that was in the burial. So there's some really interesting things that you find, especially when you have, like, when you combine, like, archaeology and the lore, you can kind of really glean some really interesting insights.
Yeah, and I know archaeology is actually not necessarily matching up to the lore, but they're finding more interesting stuff these days to validate some of it, like the burials that they found that had, this only minor really relates, but it relates because it was in burials, where they found out what they thought were men. They went back and did better forensic testing, you know, now that it's been some years since they had found it, and found out that the bodies buried with weapons, armor, and all that were actually women. So it proved that shield maidens, which were thought to be, by some, to be fictitious from the sagas and whatnot, they found out that the shield maidens were a real thing. Which I find pretty awesome.
I do too. I find that really awesome, actually. But yeah, I mean, and that's something that I'm finding really super interesting, is that the more archaeology out, and then, like, you put the lore on top of the archaeology, you're really getting a lot of really good information, and you're getting more and more insights into the daily life and the beliefs and different concepts and stuff. And that's just something I find fascinating.
And me too, very much so.
And then I guess after, you know, when we're talking about different things as far as especially ship burials, there's a lot of evidence for it. It's also thought of a way for kind of the dead to travel to the afterlife. And we're going to get kind of into the afterlife concepts here in a minute, because it's very different, because a lot of people think that as far as the Norse go, you either have hell or Valhalla, and there's really nowhere in between. But there's a lot of really in-between places, and the more you read it, a lot of the people, the Germanic peoples, a lot of times they didn't place a huge emphasis on the afterlife in their daily practices. You know, they might talk about their ancestors and their great deeds, but there was not a lot of thought given to what happens to me after I die. And that kind of shifted with the conversion to Christianity, and you kind of see that a little bit with the legends that are the stuff that is written after conversion. But the stuff that's not written after conversion, or the stuff that's right around the time that's written by known pagan authors, things are a little different. Another thought of how possibly the dead go on to the next world, traveling by horse, because sometimes in some graves they find horses in them.
Which again is another tie back to the Odin stories.
Right. And some people have said that they're not, you know, they've also said they're not sure it could be a, either a means of transport or a meal for the person who is dead, which is interesting. But so it's kind of different, but it's also kind of the most, if you look at it, it's also considered, if you look at in the lore, how people go from world to world to war, from world to world, a lot of times they're traveling by horse. So it would make sense that people would use a horse.
Absolutely. They viewed it, it was basically a psychopomp in Norse culture. It was the way certain birds and things are viewed in other cultures, including Christian culture, is the way many Norse viewed and still do view the horse. Like you said, it transports from the realm of the living to the realm of the dead. So,
and I think before we actually get into afterlife itself, I think what we're going to do is probably take a really, really quick break here. Just to kind of break things up. And I think I'm going to play a song by Cassandra here. Where did it go? King Wenceslaus, since it's apparently that time of year.
Yay.
Good King Wenceslaus looked out on the feast of Yule, when the snow lay round about, deep in winter's rue. Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel, when a poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel. Hither, page, and stand by me, if thou know'st it telling, yonder peasant, who is he, where and what his dwelling? Sire, he lives a good league hence, underneath the mountain, right against the forest fence, by St. Agnes' fountain. Bring me flesh and bring me wine, bring me pine logs hither, thou and I will see him dine when we bear them thither. Page and monarch, forth they went together, through the rude wind's wild lament and the bitter weather. Sire, the night is darker now, and the wind blows stronger. Fails my heart, I know not how, I can go no longer. Mark my footsteps, my good page, tread thou in them boldly. Thou shalt find the winter's rage freeze thy blood less coldly. So the fire burned hot bright on the palace fender, twice as warm love's faithful light, true and strong and tender. As good people everywhere, wealth or rank possessing, you who now will bless the poor shall yourself find blessing.
And we are back. And that was Cassandra with the song King Wenceslaus. And you are listening to the Tree of Life Hour here on Pagans Tonight Radio Network. This is Raven Fired Off.
Samara Luna.
And Ulf Hammerhart.
And we are talking about death and the afterlife. according to the Norse peoples. And so I guess we need to go ahead and start talking a little bit about afterlife. Or probably a lot about afterlife, because there's a lot out there. Of course, I mentioned earlier about the concept of hell in Valhalla. And a lot of times where you get this misconception of when you die, you either go to hell or Valhalla, a lot of it is what is written in Snorri's writings, especially some of in his Eddas and stuff. Of course, you know, the widest realm of death is Helheim, and it's considered not bad at all. It's basically kind of every person that doesn't go somewhere else winds up in Helheim. And it's not a bad place. It is the realm of God as hell. Also, Baldur is there. The thing about it is it's a place of rest and peace.
Well, it can be harsh, and she can be harsh, depending on why you ended up there. But, yeah, it's not necessarily a bad place or an evil place like it gets depicted. You're right. But depending on how you ended up there and things like that, she can be harsh to you. You know, she's not nice just because you're in her realm. But
yeah, in order for something bad to happen to you, you had to have deserved it. You know, because there's tales of different things that happen to Oathbreakers and stuff there. But, I mean, like I said, you had to have deserved whatever happens to you. It's not like you go there because you're a bad person. Like I said, everyone who doesn't go somewhere else winds up there. You know, for the most part, it's, you know, reading some of the lore and stuff, it's basically, you know, you go there, there's feasting, it's peaceful, it's a place of rest. The one thing about hell is not going to have really much to do in Ragnarok.
Well, also, too, something I just recently learned that I think is interesting because it mirrors something in the Egyptian faith a little. Apparently, when you go to hell, she will weigh your soul. She will weigh your soul and your deeds, and that will mirror in, if you go to Helheim, how you're treated and the place you get there and things like that, much like Anubis weighs the soul. In the Egyptian afterlife, hell weighs the souls of the worthy and unworthy as they enter Helheim.
Right. Go ahead, Ulf.
No, I was just joking that it sounded like I struck you silent there.
No, I was getting ready to say something. And the thing about it is for you to be considered a bad person, you know, it's oath breaking. It's like murder with malicious intent. It's not being honest dealing or fair handed or anything of that sort. It's very different what you have to do to get into a lot of trouble.
Well, I don't know if this has changed in the more modern beliefs, but I know in some of the older stuff I've read and listened to and such, anyone who died in their bed, because dying in your bed was considered an old man's death, a weak death, not necessarily honorable, but I had always heard that those who died a bedridden death ended up in hell, in hell's care. I don't know if that's changed, we found Lord to repute that, or if maybe I've been misinformed, but I've read lore and things where it says that's also some of the patrons of Helheim, is those who die in their bed, those who were poisoned so they couldn't die a warrior's death, things of that nature.
Yeah, but, I mean, also, if you think about it, though, for someone who has been a warrior all their life, you know, the thought of a peaceful afterlife might be exactly what they want. Where there's no more fighting and battles or anything like that. I mean, it just depends. And we're going to talk about Valhalla and all that here in a minute. But, you know, I think the one thing I was wanting to say.
But I'm weird.
Huh?
I said I personally am looking forward to an afterlife full of battle, but I guess I'm weird.
But that's different. I mean, and the other thing you also need to think about is, you know, Baldur was killed by a bolt, and he wound up in Helheim. And someone would say, but he died a warrior's death, but he wound up in Helheim anyway.
Yes, but depending on whether you follow the spirit or the letter of the lore here, that can differ, because, yes, he did die a warrior's death, sort of, but he ended up in Helheim because hell courted him. It was part of bringing Ragnarok finally to a head, or not to a head, but to a halt, was him agreeing to be with hell, who had always loved him and things like that. So his case is a bit of an exception, according to the lore.
Right, but I did want to bring that up. It's not like, you know, he was slain by a kinsman versus dying in battle.
Right.
So that could be extrapolated into the fact that if you were killed by a kinsman, you could possibly wind up in Helheim versus Valhalla.
I admit some of our afterlife beliefs and practices I don't 100% understand because, well, frankly, that sucks. You live a good, valiant warrior's life your whole life, and then a kinsman slays you, and you end up in a place other than Valhalla. You end up in Helheim for someone else's deed, not your own. Part never made sense to me.
Yeah, no, and it and for some people it doesn't. It's just really, really interesting. And I mean, you could really read a lot about hell. In Artroth. Also something that I came across really interesting. It's something that is written in Artroth. It says, even the distinction between the battle dead and other kinds of dead becomes suspicious when the sources are looked at carefully. Like Odin and Freya, Hel, according to Ynglingtal, also chooses her dead. That is probably to say determines who shall die. To slay someone in battle can be to send them with Odin, as mentioned several times in the same C-section of Hevar Saga Oak Hedrix, or it can send them to hell. Sinfijul, who dies of poison, is taken to Valhalla by Odin, as according to Egril's poem, Sonarek and the sons of Egril Skallgrimsson, one of who died of fever, the other by drowning, but Egril herself, given to Odin, acknowledged that the inevitability of his own death at the end of the poem, saying that Hel stands on the headland and he awaits her coming. Sigthor and Baldur are both weapon slain, and they both fare to hell, as do many other Edgemoan men, and that means killed by the sword. And since Sigthor is thought of the greatest of all heroes, the distinction between the dead of Valhalla and Folkvanger and those of Hel cannot be a matter of only the best going on to the higher realms. And it says sometimes that someone might be using Odin and Hel almost interchangeably as the bringers of death.
Well, in a way, when looked at in that context, it makes it puts Hel more in light of like a Grim Reaper figure, which makes sense to me. And also, one thing I think is possible about some of this, I mean, there are millions of conjectures we can make about that. Like, I mean, those of us still here in the mortal coil, we have no idea. We just conjecture about it. But it is possible that what happens to these warriors who go to Hel or through Hel, especially if you factor in the thing I mentioned earlier about Hel weighing a man's, or a woman's, to be fair, a person's soul in the afterlife, for some, Helheim could be kind of a way station, a passing through point, a limbo, if you like, where they go to there or through there for a time on their way to Valhalla.
That's a very interesting theory, actually.
I mean, it makes a kind of sense, given the light of everything our culture says about warriors dying and ended up in Valhalla, and then we have these stories of warriors at least spending some time in Hel, because much like the Greeks and many other cultures, we do have our legends about those who you know, are rescued or moved from, not rescued from the underworld so much as moved from point A to point B, like starting out in Hel and ending up in Valhalla, or one of the halls of the gods.
True.
See, that's another thing, too. People think Valhalla is the only place, and there are actually almost every one of our gods has their own hall within Asgard, and you could sort of look at it as a bunch of roundhouses gathered together, although some believe that Valhalla, Odin, which is Odin's hall, is the great hall that is so big and so great that the other halls are gathered within it. So you can go to your own, to another god's hall, such as Thor's hall or Freya's hall, and still end up in Valhalla, Odin's hall. I feel like a bad Thorsman because I always forget the name of Thor's Hall because it's not very easy to say, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I know, like, Freya's Hall is Folksvanger. And the other thing is, like, there's this concept of when a battle happens, Freya gets to choose half the dead. And they go with her. Odin gets the rest and they go to Valhalla.
Yeah. Well, it again, in the lore, it differs as to who gets which half, you know, who gets the first half and who gets, quote-unquote, the rest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or we don't know if Freya goes in and goes, I get these 500 and you get the other 500, or if they go in and Odin says, well, I get these 500 and you get the others, or if they do sort of a dodgeball to you, you know, okay, I get this guy, well, I get this guy, well, I get this guy, you get that guy.
Right, and we don't know because you know, the ways of the gods are mysterious to us humans. But, I mean, that's the thing that is really interesting about the afterlife. And there's also something in our troth, and it's something I really don't want to get into all that much because it's rather something that takes a while to wrap your head around, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. About different parts of the soul, but it's something we might actually do a show later on about. But right now, it's just kind of worth mentioning, especially if you want to kind of do some further research. So, you know, and that's in Our Troth Volume 1, and you know, those two books I can't recommend enough to heathens, especially new heathens. They're a really good source of information, and they're a really good spot, like I said earlier, for jumping off and exploring the lore. I would say, I guess I want to touch a little bit on Folkspanger before we go into Valhalla. Folkspanger is Freya's hall specifically. And, of course, we know, as I mentioned earlier, that she gets half the battle fed. And from what that can be told, that can be read in the sources, the battle dead that go to her hall also do not fight in Ragnarok. They're kind of there, and they're kind of in her hall, and she kind of has her own purposes, and it kind of, her purposes aren't exactly clear what she's doing with them, because there's not a lot that has been written down, and that's something that's kind of lost in, or, you know, lost because the religion was primarily transmitted orally. So that's something that's kind of lost. But that is something that we do know from various things that have been written in the lore.
Yeah, that's one thing I've always found tragic and a little frustrating about having a history that was so largely oral for so long, is because so much wasn't written down, we've lost, as has been mentioned on here repeatedly in the past by me and others, we've lost such large chunks of it that we'll have to extrapolate things and hope we get point A to point B right when we're talking about it and don't misrepresent stuff, but we just sort of have to go with what we know and blanks.
But I will say this, as far as heathenry goes, we are more fortunate than other paths, because we have more of our lore written down than, say, the Celts.
True.
You know, and various other peoples of Europe, we at least have more of our lore written down and intact enough where we can extrapolate things, not as much as we would like, ideally, but there's enough there that we can kind of extrapolate things from that. And I guess at this point, I guess we should talk about Valhalla.
Valhalla. it's what you'll hear. I'll start out if Raven doesn't mind. Valhalla is, you know, immediately what you hear a lot of heathens and a lot of people who think they know about Ossetru culture and Northern culture, there I can't talk. Is immediately what you'll hear them mention about the halls of the flame, the halls of the dead, and the place of glory and everything. But and it is all that. But a lot of people take it like Valhalla is the realm, and that's not actually true. Valhalla is a place in the realm that we believe we go when this life is done. A place in the realm of the gods. The realm of the gods is an entire world. It's as vast as ours, if not bigger. Valhalla is simply a place therein. That's the point I wanted to make while we were talking about the afterlife, because so many people forget that or don't even know it. They think that the one and only place up there or over there or wherever there when we pass on is Valhalla, and that's not true. Valhalla is a place within a place.
Right. And, of course, in Valhalla, the one thing that isn't mentioned very, very much is that when you're in Valhalla, pretty much every day you are fighting in a battle. And, you know, once the battle is over, everybody gets resurrected. Everybody goes back to the meat hall for a night of feasting. And then it's lather, rinse, repeat. It's kind of a way to hone these warriors for Ragnarok.
To me, it's amusing, though, that, you know, basically you have all these men and women who fight all day or whatever, however time is measured there, fight, even the ones who fight against each other and metaphorically kill each other there, then get up and help each other up off the battlefield because they're not permanently slain, and these people who fought against each other all day go and drink together, drink and feast and winch together all of the quote-unquote night, and then, like you said, lather, rinse, repeat to the next day, but It shows kind of our idea of battle and camaraderie there, in that our idea is even after fighting each other in a battle, all that time. They get up, help each other up, and feast and fellowship together before going back to do it again.
Yeah, and it's a real interesting thing. I mean, like, it's really, you know, Odin is gathering all these warriors because of Ragnarok. And then, you know, something I was reading in Induna this month, because this month's current Induna is about Valhalla. And there was a very interesting point made that Odin is also a god of words and poetry. And he, you know, someone made the thing of, what's not to say that there is a part of Valhalla that's basically a computer lab with ultra-fast Wi-Fi and latest and greatest computers in there for people to type out stories and stuff. And I'm just like, that's kind of an interesting thing because, yeah, it's not necessarily mentioned in the sagas. This is somebody's UPG. But it's something that I thought was interesting because, you know, you can kind of do battle with words. And that was something that I thought was truly, truly interesting. And I thought it was a very interesting concept worth mentioning.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting take. It makes me think automatically of Bragi, the god of skalds and also poetry, who skalds and stories at least. It makes me think of him like overseeing all that, like a professor in a computer lab.
That is so cool. I mean, yeah. As soon as you started talking about that, I started picturing it in my brain. I'm just like, yeah. I could see that. I could so totally see that. Another thing I did want to mention on, and it's something I don't think is talked about as much, is that when someone dies, a lot of times they talk about joining their kin or joining their ancestors. And it's not necessarily mentioned kind of as a place per se, but where you're going to be. Or not where you're going to be, but who you're going to be with. Because there's a lot of ancestor worship in our tradition. It permeates it, which is something that really drew me to this path about the whole concept of, you know, honoring our ancestors and honoring our dead. And the thought of joining our ancestors after death. I mean, there's mentions in the saga of people going to join their ancestors and joining their kin. I'm trying to find something here really good. Oh yeah, here's something really good. And this is from Artros. Probably the most important single element in Germanic beliefs of the afterlife, however, was the oneness of the clan. In Vita Wolframi's account of the attempted conversion of Radbald of Frisia, the king, at the edge of the baptismal font, asks what becomes of his forebears. The Christian converter replies that they are all surely in hell, two elves. Whereupon Radbald, appalled by the idea of being parted from his kin in this life and the hereafter, refuses baptism on the grounds that he could not do without the fellowship of all those who ruled the Frisians before him. And then in Scandinavia sources, we not only have Hell to Fall, but also Idril's statement in Noratec 18 that his dead has gone to visit his kin. And Sigmundur's dying words in the Volfang saga, I must now go to our kin who have gone before. And then something else that I had been reading up on as far as when you talk about kin, sometimes like when a child is named after an ancestor – you know, they might have that ancestor with them or part of that ancestor, because if you read some of the stuff about the parts of the soul in that child, you know, if they're named after that ancestor, they might have that part of that ancestor within that child. And that's why you might get a lot of, like, different people. It all starts with Sig, but the ending is different, like Sigmund, Sigurfell, stuff like that. And that's something that I find rather interesting myself.
Well, I mean, you know, there's nothing to say that these things, all these beliefs don't combine. I mean, if we end up, you know, in the great battlegrounds of Valhalla or in Freya's Hall or any of the other numerous places, I'm sure we'll have ancestors there. So no matter where we end up in that place in the afterlife, even in Helheim, we will be with our ancestors. And the ancestor worship or veneration part of our culture goes all the way back. I mean, as we've mentioned here before and touched on, we believe that if you go far enough back, essentially, the gods are our furthest back ancestors, if you will. Not to say that we all believe the demigods or anything like that. We just believe that, you know, you go far enough back and you find that our first ancestors were the gods. They fought here before they made it to godhood.
Yeah, and that is something, and that is really something interesting. Another thing that we need to hit on a little bit is kind of the Disir, because the Disir is kind of like all the female relatives, like the kin line of, it's kind of like the collective female spirits of your clan or your tribe or your family. And they kind of, you know, their role for people who are living is to kind of be a guide in some ways. But like with women, you know, when you die, you are going to become part of your clan's Disir. And, you know, that was a really interesting thing. And it was I actually started delving into this idea after a bloat that was done at Pagan Unity Festival by Amy Kinchla was the one who was heading it. And she's actually now the trusted for Kentucky. And I thought that was a really, really interesting, because she did this really interesting bloat to Frigga. And that part right there, that was really interesting to me. And that was actually rather empowering. It was really something to me that was really... that really had me pondering for a while on things. And it's like, wow, you know, I never thought of that before in that particular way. And that is something that, you know, I find really interesting. And sometimes I think the gods, you know, are trying to speak the missing lore back into this world. It's just, it's going to take time.
Well, yeah.
For it to all to come back.
Yeah, lots of time, unfortunately, but you may have a point there.
And I think it's now at the bottom of the hour, so I think I'm going to bring Samara back on here, because we need to do upcoming events.
Oh, really?
Samara?
Yeah, I was enjoying listening to the conversation.
I know you were.
And as far as events, I wasn't ready. I'm looking. Hold on. Okay, now I'm ready. So I'm not seeing too many.
Okay. There are a few coming up. I know on November 21st in Lexington, there's going to be the Kentucky Heathen Moot, at the Tally Ho. That's in Lexington, Kentucky. And for more information, you probably want to get in touch with Amy Kinchlow. She's a Kentucky Trust Steward.
November 26th. Looks like November 26th, there's a Thanksgiving potluck and full moon gathering at Moonstruck. That's all the information I have on it right now, though. That's at Moonstruck here in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
There's a Yule celebration at Harmony Nature Sanctuary, December 19th to the 20th in Palmyra, Indiana. So we're going to have Dragon Bob doing a family bloat. Drumming, kids, craft activities, Yule tea to make and take home, gift exchange, and potluck tea. Let's see, January 22nd through the 24th is the Harmony Women's Winter Indoor Retreat, and that is at Harmony Nature Sanctuary, also in Palmyra, Indiana. And you do have to be part of the Harmony Women's Circle to be able to attend, I believe. Well, I mean, it's not like you have to pay to join the circle. But it is, I'm trying to see if there's a cost. Attendance cost is $75 to attend. All meals, journals, small gifts, and workshop supplies are included in the price, so that's not a bad deal for $75. Considering you don't take care of food or anything.
Awesome.
There is going to be the Earth Centered Clergy Conference, March 10th in Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm not sure. I have not seen any further details on it. They will probably come out as it comes closer. Join the Facebook page, Earth Centered Clergy Conference. And I don't want to go too far out, but that's all I have on my list so far.
Let's see. There's a couple of things coming up on tomorrow. November 13th is the Free Folk Pub Moot in Carnegie, Pennsylvania, and the address there is 212 East Main Street. And apparently they've got a local meadery that they do their event at. Portland, Oregon, they have the White Owl Social Club Pub Moot. Is happening this coming third Saturday, 11/21. And I think that's kind of what I've got coming up. There's a couple of other things, but those are really far out. Like, I'm talking June and July and stuff, so.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to go anything too far out.
Right, right. No, absolutely.
So, as far as next week's show, I have a couple of different things possibly in the works. So I don't want to say anything yet. Just watch our Facebook page, facebook.com/treeoflife, L-O-U-K-Y. And when we have something, we will let you know. And I guess that is all for tonight.
Okay. And to take us out tonight is music by Brian Henke. The song is called Man in the Moon. This is Raven Fire.
Everyone have a blessed
y'all. Y'all be safe out there.
And this is Samara Luna, and everyone have a blessed evening, and we will talk to you next week.
And this is Ulf Hammerhart. I wasn't as talkative this evening as I usually am, but everyone stay safe. Keep your weirds clean. Talk to you soon.
Stars come out and there are shadows in the air.
I will be there with you, moonlight in your hair, forever with you, forever I am yours. I am the man in the moon. I am the guardian of travelers at night. I help illuminate the fortune teller's sight. Forever changing, forever just the same. I am the one, I am the man in the moon. Since the beginning, I've always been here shining. The earth is spinning around the sun, and when the darkness comes, I'll be there shining down. Shining down. When Mother Earth is dreaming of the coming day, I will be there for you to light and guide the way. Forever shining, forever I am yours. I am the one, I am the man in the moon. Forever shining, forever yours. I am
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's anyone, anytime, anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years, and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.